We've said it a number of times already, but we are embarking on a six-week journey, which is the season of Lent. And the season of Lent is a beautiful, but sometimes a difficult season, because what it does is, historically, Lent mirrors the 40 days in the desert that Jesus spent being tempted. And so Lent is a time that for the last over 1,000 years, many in the church have understood that unless we journey with Jesus to death, it's hard to celebrate with Jesus in life. I kind of grew up in a church background that didn't really have much practice of the church calendar, and certainly not Lent. And so what ended up happening was, essentially, you celebrated like normal every single week of the year on Sunday, which is not a bad thing. Sunday's celebration is supposed to be a resurrection every week. But then when you got to Easter, it was just kind of a big celebration, and then you continued to celebrate. And what I've learned is that if we take the time to remember what Jesus journeyed through, to remember the humanness of Jesus, to remember the suffering of Jesus, to remember our own brokenness, we are more in a place of being able to receive the beautiful gift of life that we celebrate on Easter morning. And so historically, one of the cool things is that the season of Lent is 40 days long, and the season of Easter is not just a day, it's 50 days long in the church calendar. So it's really neat. Celebration is bigger than the sorrow, even though there's a time for both. So that gives you a background, because we want you to know what we're going through. Our world is full of hurt. This is part of our brokenness. There is much damage that has been done, and that we have done, and that we have received. Jesus calls his people to be peacemakers, people of peace, to be people who reject violence and seek to enact a better way of being in the world. He calls peacemakers blessed in the book of Matthew, as he begins his greatest oratory in the Bible, in the Sermon on the Mount. Blessed are the peacemakers. He tells people not to respond only a few verses later, not to respond blow for blow, but to end the cycle of violence and to bless those people. I think that was me. I'm good. And to bless those people who may even curse us. And Jesus teaches us that it is not simply the absence of violence, but the reality of right relationships that is the way of life. Even the word peace, in Greek, it's eirene, but it translates from the Hebrew word shalom. And so the Hebrew word shalom, if you're not familiar with that, or even if you are, we need to be reminded of it over and over and over again. Shalom means rightness holistically, right ways of being and living in the world. So shalom does not simply mean the absence of violence, like we might talk about the Pax Romana, when Rome experienced a because their military power was so strong, they experienced a season where there was no battles. That's not peace if there is oppression, according to the scriptures. Peace is the presence of rightness, not simply the absence of punching or shooting or stabbing. And it even goes beyond that, because you can have a lack of shalom in your finances, you can have a lack of shalom in your health, you can have a lack of shalom in your personal relationships. So a common greeting in the Hebrew culture is, "Hi, how is shalom with you? Are you in shalom? Do you have shalom? Is there shalom in your family? Are you at peace? Is there right relationships that are present? Do you have enough food?" is a part of shalomness. Are you hungry? Are you injured? Are you sick? Are you estranged from someone? This all goes into the understanding of peace, yeah? Okay, so therefore, if we then work backwards and say then, if that's the understanding of peace, what then exactly is violence? We learn that violence is much broader than we might want to interpret it as well. Violence is anything that breaks shalom, anything that damages what God has made for good, okay? So this is the journey that we are going to be on for the next 6 weeks. We're going to talk about hurt, and we're going to talk about changing our violent ways. And we're going to interpret violence broadly. because anything that destroys peace and that destroys shalom is violence. So we're going to acknowledge it. We're going to find a better way. We do violence a lot. We destroy and we tear down shalom in a lot of ways. We do it within ourselves. We do it to others. And we even commit violence toward God. Proverbs mentions this really clearly. It's present throughout the scriptures, so we're not going to go proof texting everything here. But one of the words of wisdom in the Proverbs is, don't envy the violent or choose any of their ways. The ways of the violent don't lead anywhere. Jesus affirms that over and over and over again. But we often do the ways of violence, and it's time that we own it and we changed it. So, by the way, this next 6 weeks is not a season for finger pointing. I kind of like to do that when we talk about stuff that might convict us just a little bit. We love to focus on all the people who need to hear this. I'm not going to let you do that. Okay? We need to hear this. There is plenty of wrong in the world, and there is plenty of wrong within us. And the goal is not guilt-tripping, the goal is Christ-likeness. Okay? What's that song, 1955 Christmas song, Let There Be Peace on Earth, and Let It Begin With Me, right? Isn't that the lyrics? Yeah. Let there be peace on earth, and let it begin with me. I think Harry Connick or somebody redid it. We choose in these weeks to be honest with ourselves, to search our hearts, to repent of our violence, and to become people of shalom. So we are going to begin this week by exploring one small but incredibly major source of violence and destruction. And we find out about it in James chapter 3. The first two verses I did not put up on the screen, so just listen to these words in James. By the way, James is unique for a couple reasons, but one is that it's one of our only glimpses of New Testament wisdom literature. Wisdom literature is like the Proverbs. Some of the Psalms would be considered wisdom literature. James writes in the same way. So he writes in a broad way that's not, even though he's writing to specific people, he's writing to like everybody out there among the Christian church who are Jewish at the time. So it's a very broad letter, and he's just giving these basic things that we find out later he's really learned from Jesus. James was the half-brother of Jesus. We're not going to get into the biography because I want to talk about chapter 3. All right, not many of you should presume to be teachers, my brothers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly. That is a rough verse to share. We all stumble in many ways. If anyone is never at fault in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to keep his body in check. Now, when we get to the next verse here, I want to talk for just a second about what James means when he says that if we are able to control what we say, we are a perfect glimpse. The word perfect doesn't really exist in Hebrew. So the word, which is teleos, but the word means completeness and wholeness. And so James says, if you want to be complete and whole, if you want to be moving toward perfection, meaning a full person in all of the ways of fullness, you must pay attention to this element of your life. When we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. Or take ships as an example. Although they are so large and driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants to go. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. James gives all of these different metaphors in this small section that says, hey, listen, you need to start taking ownership and understanding the incredible power that the words that you say have. Here's the thing with wisdom literature. Most of it makes sense to us. So it's hard to let it really penetrate into our hearts because we get it. Of course, your words can hurt. All right, what's next week's theme, right? So one of the problems that we can do with this is because in certain ways it's conventional wisdom, so we miss the opportunities of what really might happen when we start to peel back the layers. James doesn't want to let go of it so easily. Here's what he says in verse 6. Consider what a great forest, what an image, is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue is also a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body, sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. Woo! I don't know how familiar you are with sparks. This is a little tool that I keep with me wherever I go. I don't keep it with me wherever I go. Are you kidding? Why would I want to make fires anytime randomly? It's a tool that you can use as a backpacker or in the wilderness if you want and need to create fire. And so what it does is it uses two different substances, and when they scratch against each other, it creates a spark. And what you do is you put a lot of kindling down on the ground, and then you release, and you send out these little sparks. Although it's supposed to be, I think I might be using the wrong side. There we go. So what you can do is you get down and you get really close to what you hope will work, and then you send these sparks out, and you send these sparks out. And didn't know you're going to have to, like, get your clothes fire retardant for the gathering. Here's the thing. It's not easy to actually start a fire this way where you want it. It is easy to start a fire this way, because most of the time when we create sparks, the sparks are actually, even though it took me 3 shots, the sparks are not that difficult to make. What's difficult to make is the landing right where you want it. It's hard to set a campfire on fire. It's easy to set a forest on fire with one of these things. And so one of the glimpses that James uses when he says, listen, you need to get out of your idea that, yes, words can hurt. Take a look and understand what I'm talking about. We've all heard stories of one cigarette dropped in the wrong place that burnt down an entire set of row houses. We've all heard the story about, which is probably not true, we don't really know, but about the cow, right, that kicked the lantern over that started the Great Chicago Fire. No one really knows what started it, but that's what the wives' tale is. We have to take seriously that our words contain massive, massive opportunities for violence and destruction. And it's often much further reaching than simply the spark that we set. It's often way, way, way bigger than what we think is something pretty small and pretty insignificant. Because most of us, our experience with sparks is that they come up from a campfire and they don't really land anywhere. So we think that maybe sparks aren't that dangerous. They're pretty small. Maybe they create a little hole in your shirt or in Melissa's, for example, jacket. But this is the violence of the tongue. It is so powerful. I was running on Thursday on a trail in the late afternoon before the sun was setting. I guess it was early evening. And this trail winds along this river and beside this neighborhood. And so it's a paved trail. So I'm running, and there are these kids sitting on like a manhole that's on the edge. And one of the kids is in the water. It was chilly outside. He was totally showing off. He didn't have a shirt on. And so I run by, and I'm running. It wasn't that cold, so I had shorts on. And I am a runner, so I wear running shorts. And as I run by, I hear this like 14-year-old kid going, "Who wears short shorts? I wear short shorts." And I had a moment where I decided, what am I going to do in this moment? I was moving along at a decent clip, so I thought for a couple seconds, and then I just kind of kept going. And then I started thinking, what would be the right response? Or, I'm coming back. It's an out-and-back loop. Or, it's not a loop. It's an out-and-back run. So what am I going to do when I come back? And one thing made me chuckle, and that is that bullying doesn't work on dads, I realized, anymore. But it would have worked on my kid. Because it worked on me when I was 14. And it got me thinking, for more than one reason. I hadn't found a really good illustration for this week, but it got me thinking, that was helpful. But also, what are we going to do in a world where it's so easy to toss out sparks and where you don't know exactly how it's going to land? And so I had about 15 minutes of running. I'll get back to that story. I had 15 minutes of running where I got to think, how will I respond when sparks are thrown? What kind of sparks can I make myself on the way back? The first half of this little passage from James is about the power of the tongue. We must understand there is great power in the words that we say, and we don't always get to control how or where they land. James then moves on as he continues talking about this, and James is just, whether he's, you know, struggling to figure out the right metaphor or he's just a brilliant teacher of imagery, we don't know, but he keeps going with all these different metaphors. And so he gives this kind of wisdom statement again. Sounds like the Proverbs. All kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and sea creatures are being tamed and have been tamed by mankind. But no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil full of deadly poison. We must understand the power. And then James shifts things. James moves from the power of the tongue to talk specifically to his Christian brothers and sisters and talk about the inconsistency of the tongue. Here's what he says. With the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness. We should not miss that part, because it's not just, well, you're doing a nice thing over here and then a mean thing over here. He's saying, listen to what you're doing. You're praising God with your tongue, and then you're cursing human beings who have been made in God's image, who bear the mark of the same Creator. Out of the same mouth come praising and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this should not be. Can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? My brothers and sisters, can a fig tree bear olives or a grapevine bear figs? Neither can a salt spring produce fresh water, image after image after image, but we move from fire eventually to water. Inconsistency is one of the most damaging things, not just, if you'll notice, the fire is something that happens from the spark going out, but a spring is what's inside the spring that's being damaged when it doesn't know whether it's producing fresh water or salt water. So in one way, the power of our words can be incredibly damaging out there to others, and in another way, the power of our words and the inconsistency of our words can be incredibly violent to our spirits. Talking a lot about outdoor stuff. When I used to go backpacking a lot, sometimes I would go in the summer during the hottest times of the year. And when you go during the heat of the year, especially if you're in mountains where you're not going through a lot of towns or anything like that, water sources are really important. You have to plan really well to find your water sources that you're going to fill up on. And so on your map, you look for water sources. Certain sources are marked with an asterisk. And what it will say is that this is a seasonal spring, or this is an inconsistent spring. What that means is that if it's in certain seasons, it won't be producing any water. When you are a backpacker and you see that, do you know what you do? You completely disregard that, meaning you do not plan to stop at that spring. You make your plans without it because you don't want to deal with an inconsistent spring. You know that it's not trustworthy, so you stay away from it. Are we tracking? James says, listen, you do immense violence to yourselves and to the world when you say one thing in one setting, and then you go out and you say something else and you do something completely opposite of it, or that does not reflect the first thing. You're like, he says, I love how he says, this should not be. The actual wording is that it cannot be. Like, we translate it as should, but like he's saying, this is impossible, right? It's impossible for a salt spring to produce fresh water. It's impossible for a freshwater spring to start spitting out brackish. So the challenge here is he's subtly saying, it can't actually be. Right? Like, it's not a freshwater spring if salt water is coming out. This is really, really, really offensive to us because we know that we kind of are these inconsistent springs a lot. But where is he getting this stuff? He's actually, before we go too far into that, let's just talk about how specifically we can do violence with our own words. Let's take a moment and think. Here are some of the ways that we can do violence. This isn't going to be rocket science to you. Outbursts that come from lack of self-control. when we're just kind of fed up and we can't take it anymore and we say something that we wish we hadn't said. My mom grew up in Nigeria, and when someone would say something that they wanted to take back, after they said it, they'd go, it was a common saying. So in my house, when somebody would say something that they shouldn't have said or wish they hadn't said, they'd go, and the Nigerian culture would continue in my family. But sometimes outbursts simply come from lack of self-control. Sometimes our words are violent when we choose to be critical with our comments. We cut others down to make ourselves feel taller. Or maybe it's just to unload when we feel frustrated, but we find things, everything, to critique. Specifically, we use exaggerated terms when we are in the middle of this. Terms like, you always do this, or you never do this, or why are you so blank? And you notice we paint with this massively large brush. And first of all, it's not true. Second of all, wow, think about what we're doing when we do that. Think about what we're doing when we give a comment that says that somebody is wholly and fully that way, and it's negative. We're not going to go into all the studies that show how much you need to say positive affirmation to undo negative critical comments, but it's enormous and it's powerful. We do violence with our words when we don't know when to stop. Dads, listen up for a second. In Colossians, we see this teaching, children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. Man, we love that passage. That is gold. Boy, do I love that one. Fathers, do not exasperate your children so they won't become discouraged. It's never happened with me, but maybe for some of you, there's a temptation to exasperate your children when you are frustrated and your children get discouraged because, boy, do you find any little thing to pick apart when they haven't listened to that. This is also wrong and that's also wrong. And, oh, you are just so blank right now. Why do you always complain? And our children get frustrated and they get beaten down because in our own ways, we're cursing someone who's in the image of God. We must be aware. Ephesians 6:4 in the Message version, fathers, don't exasperate your children by coming down hard on them. Take them by the hand and lead them in the way of the Master. Point them toward the way of Jesus rather than simply criticizing. The target of our arrows is so often our children and our family. And then another way that we can do violence with our words is our labels. This is where blessing and cursing really comes into play, because I've seen this so many times over the past few months of people who worship Jesus. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. Let your disagreements be clear and humble, but don't use words as weapons by labeling a group or a person. Libtards, Trump chumps, nut job, idiot, imbecile, moron, sheeple. I don't care if you think your label is justified. It does violence, and it should not be. Let your words build up and not tear down. Stop using labels. We should take a look for a minute, by the way, why this is all so dangerous and where James got his ideas. He got them from Jesus. Almost directly. Here he is in Luke 6:43. No good tree bears bad fruit, nor does a bad tree bear good fruit. Each tree is recognized by its own fruit. People don't pick figs from thorn bushes or grapes from briars. A good man brings good things out of the good stored up in his heart, and an evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in his heart. For the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. Take a look at that last sentence. For the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. Jesus, I feel like you're oversimplifying all of this. Good point. That was supposed to be a joke. God's response to our need to say that his teaching is too hard. All right, sometimes they land, sometimes they don't. Lesson about the sparks, remember that. Okay. What if this whole thing isn't really, what if the whole thing of guarding your tongue isn't really about holding back? What if it's not about self-control at all? What if that's not the end goal? What if, rather than the end goal of self-control, what if the end goal is complete and utter personal transformation in such a direct way that what is inside our heart is so clean and pure in terms of how we see and understand other people as made in the image of God and understanding what our responsibility is to speak words of life and love, and that instead of us worrying about what not to say, we can simply trust that what comes out is coming out of a heart that's postured toward Jesus. It doesn't mean that everything you say is all happy, clappy, you know, but what it means is that we're not using our words to tear down. And I think it has to go beyond self-control. I think Jesus wants it to go beyond self-control. I think Jesus wants it to go to a transformed heart. There's maybe one more way that we do violence with our words, and that's self-promotion on the flip side. Prideful boasting, or harmful self-deprecation. I'm terrible, nobody likes me, or listen to what impressive thing I did the other day. Look at my Instagram pictures. There's so much that we can do violence with our words. So what is a way forward? James goes into the next section right after this, and he says that right after highlighting, right, this damage of a powerful and inconsistent tongue, that the way forward is wisdom and humility. He goes on and he says, earlier in the book, he says you should ask for wisdom, but then later, right after this section, he says, wisdom is the truth and the hope for someone who is caught with an inconsistent tongue. It's slowing down and choosing wisely. So what might wisdom look like as we seek to control and purify our tongues in this world? These are really practical. We want to take this stuff seriously. The first thing is use enormous caution in the digital world. Words are not only vocal anymore. Now they are digital. We have a world of texting and a world of email and a world of social media. Words are more permanent and less personal than they've ever been before, and both of those things are dangerous. Words are more permanent and less personal than they've ever been. You can toss a spark out that could have unbelievably far-reaching consequences farther than ever before without even realizing it and sometimes without intending it. We need to be aware of how much kindling there is out there. Look at how your words and viewpoints and opinions come across. On a very practical level, do you agree with the concept of an article but disagree with the language that it uses toward others? Then don't share it. Would you be hesitant to say something disrespectful to someone personally? Then don't write it. Earlier in James, he says all of us should be quick to listen and slow to speak. That's what I want. I want to be quick to listen, and I want to be slow to speak. So we use enormous caution in the digital world. We refuse to label others. That is so incredibly important. We refuse to place others into a camp that takes away the uniqueness of their individuality. We just don't do it. And in doing that, we train ourselves to recognize the good in other people. We train ourselves to look around and see the beauty and the mark of God in every single human being. Whether it's under your own household, and sometimes it can be really hard to see the mark of God in the people that you spend the most time with, right? Because they just frustrate you so much sometimes. At least that's what my wife says to me. We have to be people who recognize the good in others, especially our kids, by the way, especially our kids for us parents. We should give a minimum of 5 genuine compliments to each of our kids every single day. We have to counteract a lot of forces out there. Most of them our own. Let's take this seriously. Finally, or Two more. If you're frustrated, think carefully before you speak. If you're frustrated with something, just think carefully before you speak. These things are obvious. We're talking about wisdom literature this week. Think carefully before you speak. And finally, submit to Jesus. So I'm running along, and I turn around, start running back, preparing for this encounter, and I start thinking, okay, I have to preach about this on Sunday, so I better watch it. And so I'm like, okay, Lord. That was the best step, by the way, just that. Okay, Lord. So I start praying for this kid. And what happens when you pray for someone happened, and all of a sudden I started to have compassion, and started to see this kid, and it started to change the way that I realized I could approach a situation like that. The story doesn't have a cool ending, because unfortunately when I got there, they were no longer there. But I was prepared in a new way to kindly and simply encourage the kids to the better way of kindness. Say, hey guys, do you realize how much fun life is when you choose to be kind to people, especially strangers? It's amazing the difference that it can make. Try it. Have a great day. I wanted to. I was excited to. But choosing to submit all of these moments to Jesus, choosing to submit our tongues to Jesus and say, okay, Lord, I know I have this tendency to be critical. Maybe it's just in my mind, but maybe it's toward my kids. Maybe it's toward the people who I disagree with. Maybe it's toward people whose lives I see as sinful. Maybe it's toward Christians who have hurt me. Because this comes in lots of ways. Or maybe I fly off the handle too easily when I get home from work and I'm frustrated. Or maybe I fly off the handle too easily because I've been home with the kids all day long. Or maybe I'm sick and I have this chronic illness and it just makes me grumpy and I lash out at people even though they didn't do it. Maybe I just like to hear myself talk and I know I'm clever. And I know that I can get that witty comment out, and people will say that was a good one. Fires start in so many ways. But when we submit to Jesus, the humility, the love, the challenge of Jesus, it changes how we speak. It changes the well within us that then springs forth from our mouth. Out of the overflow of the heart, the same passage that I showed, some of you might be more familiar with the translation, out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. It's so true. So let's address our hearts by submitting to Jesus. Not just say, I'm not going to say it. God, change me. Change me. Let peace, let there be peace on earth. Let it begin with me. Don't lose hope, by the way, if you're discouraged by all this, because if you feel convicted, I hope you do, because that means that Jesus is doing something, but it also means that I'm not alone in how I felt as I looked at this subject. So you'll be a good community to me if you also feel like maybe there's something that you can grow from here. We are on the journey toward the cross with Jesus for the next 5 weeks. And here's what happened there. And this is absolutely crucial for us. Jesus first is our model. When Jesus goes into the battles of the world, you can see that he does not use his words to start fires except to counter the condemnation of others. When Jesus goes to the cross himself, he chooses not to speak words of hatred and words of anger and words of bitterness toward those who are persecuting him, toward those who are doing violence to him. Instead, he absorbs that. Instead, he ends the cycle of he said, she said, back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, and says, I'm not going to say anything. Pilate even gets upset at him about it. Why don't you speak up? Jesus, defend yourself. They're accusing you. Accuse them of falsehoods, whatever. Jesus chooses not to. He chooses that there might be a better way, and it's radical. He doesn't call names. Interesting, even in the temptations in Luke 4, he grounds his words in Scripture, which I think is really, really significant. Satan uses his words against him. Jesus, turn the stones into bread. He says, quote scripture, says, man doesn't live by bread alone. Scriptures say don't put the Lord to the test. All these different moments where he chooses to ground what he's saying in the words that he has seen life from in the way of God. So, it goes more than just Jesus is our example, though. He's also the atonement. On the cross, we see that Jesus took what we were unable to accomplish. Jesus absorbed our violent ways. He experienced the consequences of sin, and he ended its power. Inconsistent tongues are dealers of death, but Jesus deals with our inconsistency. He makes impossible things possible. He makes death into life. He purifies brackish springs. He calms raging storms, and he stops forest fires. And his spirit with us releases us from shame in our mistakes, and he empowers new levels of self-control and new levels of love deep within us, because that's what it's all about, right? Everything that we're talking about here, it's about love changing the way that we damage others and damage ourselves. If our hearts are filled with love, the words that spill out will be gracious, and they'll be hopeful, and they'll be kind, and they'll be gentle, even toward 14-year-olds who are longing for peer popularity by making fun of your running shorts. May it be so with each of us. May we change our violent ways and use our words to bless and not curse. Amen.